Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, most compassionate, most merciful. Brothers, sisters and friends, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. As you've just heard, Sami al-Hajj was not able to join our tour around the country, sadly because he was unable to obtain his visa for the United Kingdom. But in the true sense of the role of his job, despite 6 years in Guantanamo Bay, despite him being held in that most notorious of detention camps, Sami, within weeks of his return, was campaigning for people who were detained without charge or trial in Guantanamo Bay. And when, of course, the terrible incidents of what's taking place in Palestine and Gaza began, he went as fast as he could on the ship aptly named the Dignity, which was eventually struck by an Israeli boat. He is at present, from what I've last heard, attempting to, or is in, Gaza itself. But Sami's legacy and the legacy of Guantanamo Bay is still very real. And many of us who are held in the prison camp of Guantanamo began to formulate our words and thoughts in ways that we couldn't have done anywhere else on the planet. And he did so in one of his poems entitled Humiliated in the Shackles, which I'll now read you. When I heard pigeons cooing in the trees, hot tears covered my face. When the lark chirped, my thoughts composed a message for my son. Muhammad, I am afflicted. In my despair, I have no one but Allah for comfort. The oppressors are playing with me as they move freely about the world. They ask me to spy on my countrymen, claiming that it would be a good deed. Their temptation seized my attention like lightning in the sky. Their gift is an evil snake, carrying hypocrisy in its mouth like venom. They have monuments to liberty and freedom of expression, which is all well and good. But I explain to them that architecture is not justice. America, you ride on the backs of orphans and terrorize them daily. Bush, beware. The world recognizes an arrogant liar. To Allah, I direct my grievance and my tears. I'm homesick and oppressed. Muhammad, do not forget me. Support the cause of your father, a God-fearing man. I was humiliated in the shackles. How can I now compose verses? How can I now write? After the shackles and the nights and the suffering and the tears, how can I write poetry? My soul is like a rolling sea, stirred by anguish, violent with passion. I am a captive, but the crimes are my captors. I am overwhelmed with apprehension. Lord, unite me with my son Muhammad. Lord, grant success to the righteous. Sami al-Hajj, of course, was eventually reunited with his son Muhammad earlier last year. And he became one of the lucky children who, in this war on terror, eventually get to see their parents after many, many years. Because there are so many children who have now grown, in the case of several of the detainees, into young adults. There are some children, even in the United Kingdom, who have never seen their parent because he languishes in one of the cells of Guantanamo Bay. 7-year-old children, moving on to 8 years old, who have never in their lives known what it means to have a father, known what it means to have a father take you out to the cinema, out to the shops, play with him, do all the things that a father would do at school when the children are collected from school. And when children speak as they do, they say, "What does your dad do?" And the child then has to say, "My dad's in prison." So as a society, what do we say? We say that anybody who's in prison must be a bad man. So those children must be taking another child. Ah, your dad is a bad man. You're the son of bad people. And if we as adults can't explain to you the concepts of the existence of detention without charge or trial, how is a child going to explain it to another child? How can we tell them that there are systems in place today that demonize and dehumanize people to the level that they can be detained for years on end, falsely imprisoned, tortured, rendered extraordinarily? A new terminology is used to describe these things, extraordinary rendition, as if to say that this is something quite euphoric, that this is something good, not to say what it really is, that it is a destruction of people's lives. And that's what it's done to us today. It destroyed my life, it destroyed Omar's life, it destroyed the lives of the people that have been released, the 500 plus detainees that have been released, and the ones that are still there. The scars we will carry forever. But what is it that has allowed people, and we ourselves are complicit in this, either tacitly approving by our silence and our inability, or having no desire to do anything, or directly when people say, this is the price that you have to pay to have freedom. Here's the irony, the great irony, that you'll see the plaques outside Guantanamo Bay's many camps, whether it's Camp 5 or Camp 6, that is maximum security, state-of-the-art prisons built at the cost of millions of dollars, or whether it's solitary confinement sections like Camp Echo, where I was held for 2 years, or whether it's Camp Iguana, where the young children of Guantanamo remained children until they were no longer children, or whether it's Camp X-Ray, where you saw those men kneeling in orange suits with masks over their faces and goggles over their eyes and earmuffs over their ears, looking like the extraterrestrials we were told that they were. Whichever of the camps that you see, there's one thing that is common. Each camp will have a plaque outside it, and it will be written upon it, honor bound to defend freedom. That's a joke. Freedom. The people behind these camps, behind these plaques, have not seen freedom for the past 7 years. Surely, this concept of freedom that we see used all over the place, everybody uses it, everybody tries to use it and manipulate it. And in the name of freedom, how many of our liberties are curtailed? How many of our freedoms are curtailed? Operation Enduring Freedom. There's a joke. Operation Enduring Freedom. I've always thought that freedom was something that was granted to you from the point that you're alive to the point that you die. You don't have to endure freedom. Torture is something you have to endure. Cruel, inhuman, degrading treatment. That's something you have to endure. Being punched and kicked and dragged in front of your wife and children. That's something you have to endure. Having your clothes ripped off with a blade so close to your skin that you can feel the cold steel as it glides across. That's something you have to endure. Being spat at. Being called a murderer and a terrorist. Being called all sorts of racist derogatory names whilst that's being done to you. Being interrogated naked. Being shaved to the point that if you were to look in the mirror, you wouldn't even know who you were. You couldn't recognize yourself. That's something you have to endure. Being held in cages that are made of shipping converted shipping containers, or other cages that are simply coils of concertina and razor wire put together so you can't even get near the edges. That's something you have to endure. Watching your letters that come from your child who's about 6 years old, being completely blacked out, except for in the top you can see Allah most compassionate, most merciful, everything in the middle blocked out and blacked out, and at the bottom, I love you, Dad. That's something you have to endure. You have to endure not knowing what it is you're being held for in this prison camp. You have to endure that. But freedom, my friends, is not something you're supposed to endure. That is your right. That is our right. And for people in the world today, as they have done, in the name of freedom, have debased us in a way that could never have been imagined. When they use the terminology of the war on terror, and now they're backtracking. Of course, you hear the politicians now saying, we shouldn't have used this terminology. We shouldn't have done this. We shouldn't have dealt with things in this way. Well, it's all too late now. It's too late. The damage has been done. People's lives have already been destroyed. If they thought that Guantanamo Bay was ever going to be a place that stops people from getting radicalized, as they call it, then remember the people that they dressed up in orange suits in Iraq and executed and beheaded. That was the reaction of Guantanamo Bay. That is the tangible effect of what Guantanamo Bay did for the rest of the world. Everybody, everybody can point fingers towards Guantanamo Bay and say how evil it is. But we as detainees can tell you that Guantanamo Bay is simply the tip of the iceberg. Everybody wants to know about Guantanamo. If we were sitting here saying that here are the prisoners of Bagram or Kandahar, I dare say this room would be even half full or half empty. But everybody wants to hear about Guantanamo Bay because it's the place you can point the fingers towards. The other places require some research on your part and on mine. By the time we went to Guantanamo Bay, we were looking forward to that place. We were looking forward to being put in these cages that measure 8 foot by 6 foot, in which it's physically impossible to take more than 3 steps in either direction. So that when Obama says now today that I will close Guantanamo, and I will close down the secret detention sites, and I will stop torture, as if to say prior to this, torture was rampant. When he tells you these things, then try to ask the questions about what is he not telling you. What has he not said? Well, I'll tell you what he's not said. He hasn't said sorry. He has not said sorry. So why close down a place that you think is not bad? If it's bad, then surely there must be some compunction. There must be some regret. If it's bad, don't simply close it down and tell us, we've done away with torture now, that was their problem, I'm entering into a new phase. Next to me, I have Christopher Arendt, who's taken upon his shoulders the task of, first of all, communicating with the former detainees. And then the immense task, which shouldn't be his burden by any means, to apologize for a nation, the world's most powerful democratic nation. It's up to a 24-year-old. He's the only one who has the courage to do so. Is that where we're at? Where the President of the United States of America can say, I will close this place down. Why will you close it down? If it's not worth apologizing about it, then don't close it down. Leave it open. So that's one thing that he's not done. And the second thing that he's not done or not told you is that the military detention sites in which we were held, myself, Omar, and many other people, they will continue to receive hundreds of prisoners. How? When Obama says that he will close down and that he will pull out the troops from Iraq, it's welcome. But what is he going to do with the troops that he pulls out? He's going to put them into Afghanistan, where it all began, where the war on terror allegedly began. And more troops in Afghanistan means, by extension, more detentions. More detentions, therefore, means, by extension, more likelihood of abuse. I saw two people getting killed, beaten to death in Bagram. Kicked and punched to the point that they were no longer alive. I didn't see that in Guantanamo, I saw it in Bagram. And if that sort of a place can continue to exist, and there is no mention of it being closed down, then I say you've been hoodwinked. I say you've been lied to, you've been had. He's told you golden words, given you golden words, and not told you really what else is going to take place. I urge you all to see a film called Taxi to the Dark Side. It won the Oscar for Best Documentary last year. It's called Taxi to the Dark Side. Take a look at what happened in Bagram. And then start asking yourself questions about why have I not heard about this? Why is this not being discussed in the public arena the way that it should be? And then you might start getting yourself some answers. As if we're being told some sugar-coated stories. Now, Obama's statements are welcome. His actions will yet to be seen. Any change after Bush was a change worth coming. But remember, what we're seeing is a principle that we need to challenge. It's not about the individual detention sites. It's about the principle that allows the detention of men without charge or trial around the world, whether it's in Guantanamo Bay, whether it's in the over 170 secret detention camps in over 70 countries, whether it's the proxy detention camps, or whether it's here in the United Kingdom, where people are held in Belmarsh and Woodhill and Longlaughton, or held on control orders that are akin to house arrest in this great land, the land of habeas corpus, the land of the Magna Carta, that says no man should be detained without charge or trial, except that they will be judged by their peers. This is one of the most important things that people have to recognize and ask those in power. Are we now at a stage today when we say that we want, our leaders want 90 days of detention without trial, or 56 or 42, even when we have 28, yet at the height of the campaign of the IRA, not, of course, to belittle internment that took place. But at the height of its campaign, when it carried out mortar bomb attacks on 10 Downing Street and on the MI5 building and in Warrington and in Canary Wharf and in Harrods and Enniskillen and Omagh and Birmingham and Guildford, at the height of that, detention without trial did not exceed 3 days. You couldn't detain a person for more than 3 days without charging him or releasing him. Today it's 28. Why? I know why. Everybody knows why. But most people are too afraid to say it. It's a blatant form of stinking racism, which is in its manifestation. And it's today called Islamophobia. That is the reality, and that is what we have to change. That is what we have to face. That is what we have to challenge those people in power about. And the way to do it is with courage. And the way to do it is also with campaigning and coming together with communities. One of the things that I've seen so far with all the movements, the anti-war movements in this country, they've produced something that had no precedent. It's brought people together in a way that never could have happened before. We've all seen this. And that gives us strength in numbers. It gives us strength in vision. So I urge all of you to continue to campaign with the groups and organizations that you see are seated on this table, with Cage Prisoners, with the Stop the War Coalitions, with Scotland Against Criminalizing Communities. But mostly, start with yourselves. Start at home, start with your families, start with those around you, and build that concentration of people who understand. Use the knowledge that you have, act upon it, teach it, and let others share in that benefit. Thank you. Jazakumullah khair.